You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, I'm Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
Hello, Lionel. We've left Daniel in Madrid. It was only earlier today that we spoke to him for our penultimate podcast from the Vuelta a España. Bit of a late finish to the final stage. But before we do a brief wrap-up of what's gone on in this Vuelta, can you give us the final tale of the etapa, Lionel?
I can indeed. It was the traditional circuit race in the Spanish capital, Madrid. Fairly run-of-the-mill stage, really. There was only one significant break to talk of, and that involved Loic Chetu of Cofidis, who was joined by Peter Kennock of Sky.
Friend of the podcast.
Yes, let's not dwell on that too long, eh, Rich? Contant Jarigui of AG2R and Cohn Bauman of Lotto NL Jumbo. And they had, they worked really well together. And, I mean, as these efforts tend to be doomed to failure, it was quite surprising that they got a minute and five's advantage over the peloton at their greatest advantage while they were away. But even though there aren't a huge number of sprinters, clearly everybody wanted it to come back together so that there would be a sprint or at least a chance for somebody to fire off out of the peloton in the closing kilometre. Chetu was the last rider to get caught. He came back to the peloton about 5 kilometres from the line, and then Orica Bike Exchange took over. Another really impressive performance by them. It was them against Tinkoff and Etics Quickstep at the finish, and Orica Bike Exchange got the better of everybody, setting up their Danish sprinter Magnus Cort Nielsen for a second stage win. Daniele Bernatti was second, and Gianni Miersman, who's already had a couple of stage wins in this race, was third. But really impressive from Nielsen, because he got boxed in on the inside at one point and had to come all the way around the back and burst through the centre, capping a fantastic Vuelta for Orica Bike Exchange. Nairo Quintana, of course, won the Vuelta, and he finishes ahead of Chris Froome and Esteban Chavez on the podium. The green points jersey went to Fabio Fellini of Trek Segafredo. The polka dot jersey for the King of the Mountains went to Omar Fraile of Dimension Data. And Quintana also took the white combined jersey. And that is it for not just the Vuelta, but for the Grand Tours for 2016.
It is indeed, yeah. You mentioned a fantastic Vuelta for Orica Bike Exchange. When things are going right for a team, they really do go right, don't they? Amazing run they're on, really. And everything's gone right for them at this Vuelta. Even in that sprint finish, Magnus Cort Nielsen, as you say, looked boxed in. Gianni Miersman inexplicably sort of opened the door for him to come through the middle. He drifted to the left and let a gap open for him to come through. Also worth mentioning, Jens Kukeler was his lead-out man there, the guy that basically set up Chavez's sprint on the climb the previous day, turns lead out man in a bunch sprint. One of these guys who we probably didn't know an awful lot about before this Vuelta, but he's really shown his value. But it was a funny sprint that, you know, we've talked a lot in this Vuelta about the lack of, you know, pure sprinters. And it was a sprint that a lot of teams misjudged. Giant Alpecin looked well organized, but they didn't quite get it right. Daniel Bernatti went very early, so it was a bit like watching a lower level race, but it was a stark contrast to the slick organization that you see in races where there are, you know, pure sprinters with well organized sprint trains.
Yeah, it was like the old days, wasn't it, when before the sprint trains really existed. And I think it was all the more entertaining for that. You got into the last 300-400 meters and really had no idea who was going to win. And as I say, Nielsen's bike handling and the way he managed to see a way round when it looked like the door had been closed on him, it was really impressive. And obviously he only won a few days ago in Gandia, so confidence very high. And that team, they've just been a joy to be around, really, at this Vuelta. They've committed to every day. They've really committed to an overall you know, plan to try and get Chavez on the podium, which has succeeded. You know, they've gained time when they've needed to with both Simon Yates and Chavez, and but they haven't neglected the opportunities to win stages either, because Cucalera, as you mentioned, he won in Bilbao. Nielsen's won two. Yates also won a stage in the first week. Pretty much can't get better than that, and other than winning the race overall, I guess. And but I suppose the Vuelta, that's one of the sort of motifs of this race. There have been opportunities more so than perhaps you would get at the Tour de France, where everything is so much more controlled and the level of competition is that bit higher. You wouldn't perhaps get as many opportunities as they've had here.
Indeed. Now, you mentioned earlier, Lionel, that the final stage was in Madrid. Are you sure about that? It wasn't Bogota, was it?
Well, it was really, it was amazing, wasn't it? The number of Colombians. I think Daniel posted a little video on Twitter earlier on, huge numbers of Colombian fans. And in fact, there have been Colombian fans throughout the Vuelta, often wearing the Colombian football shirt, which is yellow with sort of diagonal blue stripes on it and flashes of red and blue, very vibrant. The Colombian flag. Great big red, yellow and blue tricolour. And they really, you know, they add so much to the atmosphere. And Daniel was making the point that, you know, maybe they're not, you know, huge cycling aficionados, but they come along and they support their riders. Really, like, you know, nobody else. Perhaps only the Norwegians are as noisy and as vibrant.
Yeah, although I think cycling is far more part of the, you know, the sporting culture in Colombia, mm-hmm. Than it is in Norway or other places where you feel like they're getting behind somebody from a small country excelling in a big sport. And you know, we know the just how rich the cycling culture is in Colombia, and there's you know, various books. Matt Rendell's written a good book, Kings of the Mountains, about that. And you know, to see two Colombians on the podium at the Vuelta and a Colombian on the podium at each Grand Tour this year is quite phenomenal. And there were tremendous scenes and a great atmosphere, you know, in stark contrast to the finish in Paris of the Tour de France, which always feels a little bit cold and a bit Paris seems to overwhelm the Tour. And here in Madrid, what it seemed that the Vuelta sort of overwhelmed Madrid, and the streets were filled with people. When Quintana was presented on the podium with Chavez, the noise was pretty deafening. A tremendous atmosphere there. And then perhaps we'd see similar scenes in Paris if a Colombian does go on to win the Tour de France.
Which may well happen, you know, next year. Already, Quintana and Froome are talking about 2017. I've seen some comments already from the Sky Camp saying that they think that the Tour of Vuelta double is possible, and perhaps it may be so without the added complication of the Olympic Games in between, which is what Chris Froome had to contend with this year. Not had to contend with, he wasn't forced to do it. Obviously, he wanted to target winning a medal at the Olympics after winning the Tour and then come to the Vuelta. You know, he gave it a real good crack to try and win it. And we have to say, as good as Quintana's win has been, as strong as Movistar have been, without that one day in the climb to Formigal, without the sort of the moments inattention by Froome and Team Sky, Froome probably would have won this Vuelta, wouldn't he? And so that just shows what a sort of closely matched pair they've been over these 3 weeks. I mean, who knows what the dynamics of this final week would have been had they been a bit closer on GC. But it's been engaging and entertaining nonetheless, I think. What do you reckon?
Absolutely. And Quintana, obviously, you know, while we can say that Froome and Sky made a mistake on that day, Quintana very much did not, you know. And Alberto Contador, who I noticed won the most combative rider of the whole race and received huge cheers as well as he stepped onto the podium. But Contador deserves a lot of credit. Without Contador's attack on that day, perhaps Quintana wouldn't have won the Vuelta. So Contador has, as we always say that he does, even if he doesn't win, he has an impact on a race just by the way that he rides. But we should also, I think, pay tribute to Chris Froome, who's been a very gracious in defeat, which is not always an easy thing to be, especially when you've won big races before. You're the champion and the favourite, and when we've suspected that his relationship with Quintana has been not particularly close. There's been a little bit of needle between them. Whether that's been blown up a bit by the media, I really don't know. They were chatting away today on the final stage as if they were firm friends. But Froome has been very gracious in defeat, conducted himself extremely well. And I think it's reflected very well on him, just the way he's ridden this race. You know, having won the Tour, having gone to Rio, won a medal there. He didn't need the Vuelta, really. But he's ridden it with real hunger, with a real desire to win. And made the race much better for that. And, you know, for many years, we've seen riders put all their eggs in the Tour de France basket and really ignore the other two Grand Tours. And it is fantastic to see the Tour de France winner go to the Vuelta and try and win that as well.
And just lastly on the GC battle as well, Rich, when you look at the Giro, the Tour and the Vuelta, you can't really argue with the calibre of the overall winners this year, can you? Vincenzo Nibali in Italy and Chris Froome at the Tour and now Quintana. I mean, you know, very much three of the big four still, if you can still consider Alberto Contador part of that sort of elite bracket. And now other riders are pushing their way in, although he's not been as strong. You know, we've still seen Fabio Aru is still to come. Esteban Chavez is consistent and, you know, daring as well. I think his move to try and get back onto the podium and succeed in getting back on the podium was, you know, it took real guts to even bother trying that. Not that there was a great deal of prospect of him slipping further away from fourth place, but to go out and attempt that was great to see. And so it's been a pretty A-list year for the Grand Tours, I would say. But what have been your sort of outstanding takeaway memories of this Vuelta, Rich? You were there for about a week, weren't you, from sort of the end of the first week to the end of the second?
Yeah, I mean, in the real cycling heartland, Asturias into the Basque Country, it was great. I mean, you know, going to climbs I didn't know, stand out being Lagos de Covadonga, of course, famous climb in the Vuelta, and went up this year, and it's really spectacular up there. It was a pretty important stage. It looked decisive at the time. It was where Quintana took the red jersey, but I do remember being at the finish, very few people at the very, very top, and Quintana, when he came across the line, having put in this great performance, where Froome had sort of dropped back a bit, and I noticed that Quintana's shirt had been ripped, and it did turn out that he'd crashed earlier on in the stage, and there wasn't much made of that at the time, but in his interview tonight after winning, he sort of revealed for the first time that he'd been struggling with a real bad rib injury as a result of that crash. So that was potentially an important day in the race that you know you would expect anyway. But just in terms of the setting, really a stunning place, Covadonga, great name obviously, but an amazing road. Very few vehicles up there. We went up there in a bus and all part of the adventure of the Vuelta, I think. It was felt like uncharted territory.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast throughout the year. They have allowed us this year in part to cover all three Grand Tours. And that's been a first for us. We've always done the Tour. We've done the Tour since 2013. This has been the first year that we've also provided daily coverage at the Giro and the Vuelta. And we've done it in a slightly improvised way at the Vuelta, haven't we, Lionel? It was a late addition to our programme.
Yeah, it certainly was. It was not something that we planned at the start of the year, but I guess we could say due to popular demand, and we thought the opportunity was there. And so you were there for a week, I was there for a week. I think what I took away from that was I kind of missed travelling with you, Rich. I know that's that's probably, I missed the sort of companionship and chewing over the race and, just sort of having those sort of debates and discussions that we have in the car. The, somebody to blame when I take a wrong turn and miss the motorway junction, that kind of thing. But yeah, it would be great to
not
go...
Not that that ever happens, Lionel.
It would be great to go back next year. I think that's got to be the goal, hasn't it? Go back next year and cover the Vuelta the same way we covered the Giro. And because I felt like you watch the race on TV, and I mean, the one thing for me was the first mountain stage that I covered was on pretty familiar territory. I knew Guret, which is a ski resort on sort of towards the top of the Col d'Aubisque. I knew the top of the Aubisque. I've ridden up there. I've seen the Tour de France there. I've seen Criterium International there. That was the first time I went there back in, I think, 2000, or might have been 1999. Can't remember when it went there. And that was a really stunning day, but it didn't feel like the Vuelta to me. It was because everything was in France and it was quite familiar. So I really relished and enjoyed when we got back over the border. Formigal will be one of those stages that gets written about and spoken about for years to come, because it was a real modern day upset. And then I felt I got the sort of, the, as Daniel calls it, the breadbasket of Spain a little bit. I wasn't particularly excited about the time trial, but because I feared that it would be sort of main roadish. But actually, they used the coast road that went from Javier to Calpe, and it was a stunning course, really great scenery. And my takeaway memories of the Vuelta will be that it's more laid back in a way than the Tour, and even the Giro. But there's an intensity to it that every stage starts quite late, doesn't it? But the evenings are late and you're sort of still up at gone midnight eating dinner, as we often were.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic race. And I've been a bit harsh on it in the past as a sort of from visits I've made in the 2000s when the race was really in a bit of a slump. I think creatively it didn't look particularly good on TV. It, as Andy Hood said in our chat a couple of days ago, they used to take the stages from big town to big town, and it just lacked an identity and a character. But this year's race really sort of, it told me a fair bit about Spain as well, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I enjoyed it immensely. I think, as you said earlier there, Lionel, two men on the ground is the way to go. We'll certainly try and cover all the Grand Tours in that way next year. But it's been a lot of fun and a tremendous race. You could say, arguably, Lionel, that the Vuelta has been the best of the three Grand Tours this year. The Giro, take Vincenzo Nibali out of the Giro and that late twist, and it wasn't at the same level, perhaps, in terms of the quality of the riders up there as the Tour and the Vuelta. And the Vuelta really has seen pretty much the best of the best. Not many missing in terms of, GC riders. And that's made it very interesting because the teams perhaps haven't been as strong as at the Tour, where they could cancel each other out a bit. And it's made the racing more, the focus more on those individual riders and how they've matched up against each other. And I think for me the Vuelta's provided the best racing of the three.
Well, have you got any sort of winners and losers from the race, just very quickly?
Yes, I do, Lionel. I was thinking about this earlier today. I mean, I mentioned Chris Froome already. I think despite having not won, he comes out as a sort of winner. I think his reputation is enhanced by this Vuelta. Obviously Quintana, certainly Orica Bike Exchange, just a wonderful season for them. And this, in what has been a season focused on the Grand Tours, this has been their best, with stage wins galore and third overall with Esteban Chavez. Losers, I mean, Alberto Contador, it's the first time he's ridden and finished the Vuelta and not won it. So finishing fourth for him is a disappointment, and especially at his age, you do start to wonder whether we will see him on the top step of the podium in a Grand Tour again. We saw him win the Giro last year not that long ago, so wouldn't rule it out, but he does seem to be on the downward slope, doesn't he? TJ Van Garderen didn't finish the Vuelta, just not really sure what Van Garderen's future is. This is a race that he could and perhaps should have come to, trying to prove finally that he is a GC rider, and he didn't do that and went home early. He's not a loser as such, but Andrew Talansky in fifth place. Did anyone see Talansky in the race? I mean, we joke about a la Zubeldia, but Zubeldia at least finishes normally seventh, eighth, or ninth. I think Zubeldia was fifth in the 2003 Tour de France from memory, but Talansky, I mean, is that the most anonymous fifth place in a Grand Tour for a while?
Well, by their very nature, anonymous fifth places are very difficult to remember, Rich, aren't they?
That's a very good point.
It's one that will, as I've said a few days ago, it will be noted and added to the kind of the weight of evidence that suggests that Talansky could challenge at the Tour de France. And in a funny way, that might, that might be counterproductive in a way, because whenever the pressure's been on him at the Tour, he's not, you know, for whatever reason, you know, bad luck in one case, he's not managed to really deliver. But just to add to the winners, because, you know, Rich, I'm such a positive, life-affirming presence on the podcast, I would also add Etics Quickstep, because they won stages with Gianni Meersman, with David de la Cruz, and with Gianluca Brambilla. And obviously de la Cruz was in the red jersey for a day and finished in the top 10. And
seventh overall, fantastic ride by Delacroix.
Yeah, very good to just hang, you know, have the commitment to hang on and fight every day in those mountain stages and finish as high as he possibly could. And also I Am Cycling, because they're finishing at the end of this season and they've signed off in pretty good style, well, really good style. They've won a stage of all three Grand Tours this season, and with Jonas van Genechten and Matthias Frank, they won stages here at the Vuelta. And lastly, I've made a point over the course of the Vuelta about how many first-time Grand Tour stage winners we've had at this race. It's in double figures. I can't tot it up now, but Pierre Latour is the latest of those winning on Saturday. But I do think that we might look back in 2, 3, 4 years' time at this Vuelta being the kind of the breakthrough race for perhaps Lilian Calmejean, very likely for Valerio Conti, and possibly for Pierre Latour as well. It's a race that has brought to the fore some new names that we should take note of and look out for next season.
And I think that's what I like about it. It does provide a little glimpse into the future, if you like, that these riders will come out of the race with their reputations enhanced, but also with more confidence and the belief that they can win at the highest level. And that's exciting, I think, to witness that. It's always exciting to see young riders start to find their legs. Simon Yates as well, sixth overall. He made a joke in the latest Orica Bike Exchange Backstage Pass, which is really, really good, actually. The one on stage 20, which covers the attack by Chavez to reclaim his spot on the podium. But he mentions, you know, he's finished sixth overall. Nobody's really talked about that. A couple of years ago, that would have been a tremendous result. It still is a tremendous result. He's ridden very well and very consistently, and shown, like his brother Adam Yates, that he has what it takes to perform in a 3-week Grand Tour for GC. It's also worth mentioning, I think, Fabio Fellini, who took the points jersey, had a terrible crash earlier this year, broke his skull in the Amstel Gold Race, really freak accident. He's come back and rode really well to take the points competition, because he's an all-rounder, and, you know, he wasn't picking up loads of points in bunch sprints and so on. He had to really scrap to pick up points in all kinds of stages and to win that jersey ahead of Valverde. And
was Fabio Fellini, that you say freak accident, was that the one where they were going uphill and he appeared to be...
It was in the neutralised
zone.
Was
it in the neutralised zone?
Yeah, neutralised zone.
It wasn't the one where he appeared to be fiddling with his brakes and went over the handlebars, was it?
I think it was. Or taking a bit of mud off his fork or something like that. I'm not sure about that.
He went absolutely flying, head over heels.
It was a heavy, heavy, heavy fall. Jean-Christophe Perrault as well, it's worth mentioning. He's retiring. He was 13th overall in the AG2R veteran, who finished second, of course, in the 2014 Tour de France. So, you know, he's bowing out in some style as well, Jean-Christophe Perrault, which is good to see, because he rode the Giro, didn't he, and went home. He's had a couple of bad years in terms of crashes and so on, so nice for him to bow out on a positive note.
The Cycling Podcast, in association with Rafa.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. Thanks very much to all of you who've been tuning in, listening every day. Audience numbers have been very good, haven't they, Lionel? So again, that encourages us to look at our programme for next year and make the Grand Tours a must cover races.
Absolutely. We need to sit down and plan our race schedule for 2017 with all of this in mind. Definitely a Grand Tour podcast, aren't we? That is, you know, getting into the rhythm of the race is always more enjoyable than, you know, ducking in and out. You know, it's great. You pick up a little bit of a flavour of it, but I think covering, being on the ground from start to finish would be fantastic next year. So let's try and make that happen, shall we?
Hashtag make it happen. No, we'll definitely, we'll do that. We've got a few little bits of housekeeping just to finish off our Vuelta coverage this year. A few things coming up. The first thing is our special on Alberto Contador, El Pistolero. We've been working on that for a while. It's our ninth special of the year? Is it our ninth friend special of the year? If you're not a friend of the podcast, why not? You can become a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. It costs £10, and for that you will be able to listen to 11 exclusive, sort of monthly podcasts, but they haven't really been coming out monthly. But this will be number 9, and it looks a bit of the career of Alberto Contador. It'll open with the Vuelta, because this Vuelta has been almost said a lot about Contador, the way that he's ridden, you know, in terms of where he's at now. But we'll look back on his career from his breakthrough at the 2007 Tour de France, which he won, and even before that at his very serious accident. And we've got interviews with his brother, Fran Contador, with his mechanic, with his teammate Jesus Hernandez. Who else have we got? We've got Michael Rasmussen, who, of course, he battled with at the 2007 Tour de France. And Sean Yates, anybody else?
I think we've got a couple of...
Stephen de Jong.
Stephen de Jong, yeah, sports directors, riders, a couple of journalists. It's, looking at Contador's career from a number of different angles. Been fun to put together, hasn't it?
Yep, and hopefully that should be interesting. That will be out either the end of this week or the very beginning of the following week. So look out for that if you're a friend of the podcast. Also coming out not this week, but the following week will be our fourth cycling podcast, Femina. That's myself and Orla Shinoui, and we've got lots of good stuff for that. We should mention that the women's race, the final race on the Women's World Tour, was in Madrid today, just before the stage 21 of the Vuelta arrived, and it was won by Yolien Duur, the Wiggle High Five rider, the Belgian from Ghent. It was a bunch sprint, you know, very similar to the race in Paris. That's a sort of curtain raiser, and that sounds a bit patronising, but you know, it's on the Champs-Élysées before the riders arrive, and I don't think it's the best showcase for women's racing personally, because it is a glorified criterium, and it's great that it's there, but I think there could and should be more on offer at the Tour de France and at the Vuelta, and perhaps they'll build up to that. But the final event in the Women's World Tour, the inaugural Women's World Tour, and we'll cover all that in a bit more depth. We'll have interviews from Madrid in the cycling podcast Femina, which will come out the week after next. And we've also got some good stuff from the Olympics in there as well, actually, and a story about a new African women's team as well. So lots of good stuff in there.
Well, let's sign off, shall we, Rich? This is the last episode of our 2016 Vuelta coverage. We've got a few people to thank. I'll run through our production team. Thank you very much to all of our producers who've helped get us on air every evening. They are not in alphabetical order or in any particular order. In fact, in the order that they produced episodes throughout the race. So Tom Wally, thank you very much. Adam Bowie, Alexandra A.D., John Mooney, Paul Scoins, and particularly our four new recruits who've joined the team during this Vuelta: Matt Field, Mariana DeForge, William Jones, and Charles Patterson, who has produced this episode this evening. So thank you very much to our production team. We couldn't do this without you, and we really appreciate all the efforts that they make on our behalf. Also, thank you to Jonathan Rowe and Nick Christian for their help behind the scenes too.
Thank you also, of course, to our sponsors, Rafa and Eurosport, without whom, etc., well, we wouldn't be able to get there and cover the race. So thank you very much indeed to them. We're extremely grateful. I'd like to thank my sister-in-law, Itziar Gomez, who is the voice that introduced our Vuelta coverage and played ours and said our sponsor message as well. So thanks very much, Itziar. And Ian Boswell. Thanks to Ian Boswell, Team Sky Rider, who joined me for a Eurosport Facebook Live event midway through, or on the first rest day at the Vuelta. Very kind of Ian to give up his time for that. Hopefully it's something we can do next year. We're certainly looking to repeat the Facebook Lives, aren't we, and build on that next year. So that'll be something else to plan when we have this sit-down planning meeting, Lionel. Add that to your agenda.
Indeed. Well, I'm going on holiday first, so it will have to wait a few weeks. But I say a few weeks. I'm not, only a couple of weeks. I'm not mad. I'm not disappearing off for weeks and weeks. Just taking a little break now. The Grand Tour season is over.
You had me worried there for a second. Well, listen, let's sign off, and we'll reconvene with Daniel when he's back, and when you're back from holiday in a couple of weeks. Thank you very much,
Thank
Lionel.
You very much, Richard, and thank you, Daniel. Not here at the moment, but hopefully he's going to manage to unwind in Madrid and have a nice evening there now the Vuelta's finished.